Affairs, today, May 13, 2003. And so everyone knows, we're going to be hearing House Concurrent Resolution 10 first, then Senate Bill 372, and then we'll finish up with House Concurrent Resolution number 11. So we'll open up a public hearing on HCR 10. Speaker Minnis. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. For the record, my name is Karen Minnis, State Representative from House District 49. Good afternoon, Chair Doyle, members of the committee. I'm Karen Minnis, Speaker of the House, representing House District 49. I'm here today to testify in support of House Concurrent Resolution 10, honoring a person from my area of the state, Katie Harmon, Miss America 2002. Needless to say, Katie is well known in our community and our state. Many of her supporters are here today to express that support to you. Katie has served as a fine example for many young women. She has displayed her dedication to her family, to her community, to her state, and to her country. She has shown this in so many ways, in her service to her state as Miss Oregon and to our country as a whole when she was selected to be Miss America 2002. I want you to think back for a moment to that time when Katie became Miss America in the fall of 2001. Our country had just suffered a horrific attack by terrorists on September 11th on the World Trade Center Twin Towers in New York at the Pentagon and the foiled attempt in Pennsylvania. Many people questioned whether there should even be a Miss America event that year. But it proceeded, and I think we are better that it did. At that time, in particular, America needed a person as Miss America who could provide compassion and assistance to the families and friends of the victims who died on 9/11, as well as the rest of us affected by the terrible act of terrorism. Katie moved into the position of Miss America and exemplified all that a person serving in that role should be: compassionate, caring, and helping. At that particular point in our nation's history, Katie played a vital role in helping people to cope with the 9/11 attack. A big part of Katie's tenure as Miss America has been spent helping patients and families affected by breast cancer. She has spoken constantly on breast cancer in America, caring community by community. Katie has been a real heart for those persons suffering from breast cancer, helping them in the latter stages of that terrible disease. Katie is also someone gifted with music. She has used that gift during her reign as Miss America in her mission to help people afflicted by breast cancer and to help people cope with the terrible attack on September 11, 2001. I also wanted to recognize her parents, Darla and Glenn Harmon, who have been so supportive of Katie. And I want to recognize all of the people who have helped and supported Katie in her work towards her goal of being Miss America. Mr. Chair, I'm very proud to be here today to support this recognition by our state for a special person to us all, Miss Katie Harmon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I would say that Representative Monis Anderson, I'm sure, shares that pride as well. Katie comes from Gresham area, and we're very proud of her.
Thank you. Any questions for the speaker? It's your chance. Thank you. Claire Pence.
Beautiful day in our neighborhood.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Welcome. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I'm Claire Pence, and I live in Gresham, home of Miss America 2002. And Lori Monis is my state representative. I'm pleased to see that you're considering this resolution to honor Miss America. I consider her reign to be exemplary and a reflection on all Oregonians. Benjamin Franklin said, when we honor our youth, we declare our faith in the future. Last night on Channel 12 News, weatherman, weather lady Rhonda Shelby predicted the day to be a 9. So let's make it a 10 and pass this resolution.
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
Okay. Yes, just...
Oh. Thank you. Anderson.
I just want to note that Claire and Mel Holtz and Claire's wife been strong proponents of Miss America, and were actually responsible for getting the signs in Gresham that say, "Welcome to Gresham, home of Miss America 2002. So he's been a strong advocate.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And Dr. Bernstein.
Good afternoon, Chair Doyle, members of the committee. My name is Dan Bernstein. I'm the president of Portland State University. I drove down this afternoon to speak in support of HCR 10 and support of Katie Harmon, a PSU student. Once I arrived, I also learned that you will be considering HCR 11, and if you'll indulge me, I have to get back to Portland, but I'd like to speak very briefly to that as well. It is clear that Katie deserves this recognition as Miss America 2002. Katie brought honor to Oregon and also to Portland State University. She is an outstanding young woman, mature beyond her years. She's wise, she's compassionate, and she's been a voice for those who face life challenges, and she's also a highly talented opera singer. At Portland State, we were very pleased when Katie transferred from the University of Puget Sound to her hometown university. PSU students are expected to use critical thinking and analytical skills to assess and evaluate problems. Our nationally recognized curriculum requires our students to model themselves after the values of PSU: excellence in education, appreciation for diversity, justice, and a commitment to making a difference. And I think that Katie, during her reign as Miss America, has been a true reflection of those PSU values and to our community of learners. And so I urge you to support this wonderful commendation of Katie Harmon's work, her talents, and her commitment to service. With respect to HCR 11, as I said before,
if I could just stop you for just a moment, because you are the last person to testify on the HCR 10. So I'll close the public hearing on HCR 10 and open up a public hearing on HCR 11. Go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Doyle, members of the committee, as I said before, I just learned that HCR 11 was under consideration today. And coincidentally, during my tenure as general counsel at Howard University in Washington, D.C., I had the honor of working with John Dellenbach, who at that time served on the board of trustees at Howard University. John's had a very distinguished legal career as a civil rights lawyer and a very distinguished career as a public servant, and I just wanted to offer my my words of support in favor of HCR 11. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And we will close the...
Thank you.
We'll recess the public hearing on HCR 11 and take that up again a little later this afternoon. Now we can open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 372. And I think bring up Gary Fredrickson and Jerry Reitman. Committee members, Representative Greg Smith will be coming in from a committee that he's currently part of now. He needs to stay in that committee as he's functioning part of the quorum. So once that's relieved, then he'll be here to come in and talk as well. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi, I'm Gary Fredrickson. I'm vice chair of the Morrow County School Board. And I wanted to let you know that we had a school board meeting last night, and the school board voted to support Senate Bill 372, A. Engrossed. And I'm here to answer any questions you might have of our position.
Okay. Can you folks just give us some background on how we got to Senate Bill 372? What I think just kind of helped build our record a bit on why you're even here today.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jerry Reitman. I'm from Ione, and I'm representing the Ione Self-Determination Committee, which is a... about 6 months ago, it became apparent that the community of Ione, a town of a couple hundred with a couple hundred people living outside of it, was that the likelihood that they were going to lose their high school and middle school. And it was our conclusion, no school, no town. And we had a series of community meetings with several hundred people there. We pursued a petition process, which 80% of the registered voters in the affected area of the proposed new school district signed and supported, and we did that in a 10-day period. But in that process, we learned that what we really needed was more than just a petition to the ESD, that we needed to have legislation that allowed us to separate. And then over the last few months, the school board had concerns about specific issues of division of assets and how we go about that, and we negotiated for many long, hard hours between the Ion community and members of the school board, and we ended up with a letter of understanding. I believe you have that, and there was an agreement on that ended up with this A engrossed bill. And so we, at this point, have solved what we can locally, but what we're asking is that we find a way to allow us to separate off as a separate community. One of the things you need to understand, in Marl County, it's the policy of the school district that each community operate on the revenue that the state funding formula passes through to each community. And we hired Al Meunier, a retired superintendent, to help us determine whether it was financially feasible to run a school district based on that flow through of funds. And we've concluded that that is something that we can do. And we just want you to know that today the amount of money that would come in is going to be the same amount of money. There's only so many dollars is paid out, you know, per student, per location. We're going to be changing the makeup of which is a small school in Marl County and which is a, you know, that might get different levels of funding. There won't be a difference. It'll simply be two school districts instead of one. But the economics for the state are neutral. And if we were consolidated, I know that's addressed in there, but one of the concerns I have is that we didn't address the large transportation. You need to understand is that this school that they would have considered moving us to was 20 miles away from my own. We would have children on buses more than 40 miles each direction every day to get them to a different location than the one we have. We also have a huge makeup of folks that have moved to Ion to live there, to put their kids in our rural community, and the parents are driving 50, 60 miles each direction each day for the job, and they have the kids there for the school. And we know that if we don't have the school, those folks are going to leave. And we also have a new dairy that's opened up, and in short order, we expect to have another 15 to 20 more jobs. There's a windmill project that's close by that would be close to that school. And we think we've done great things in our community to have a community and keep it alive, but without a school, we don't have a community.
Questions? Representative Close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if you looked at the option of becoming a public charter school.
We did, and we didn't see that it would work. You know, there's reductions for overhead back to the county district, and we didn't see how it was going to work. You know, we explored the thoughts on maybe there was some way of staying in the district and having some more self-control, and I don't think it's feasible. We did explore it quite a bit. Like I said, we had a community process where the school district asked us to make significant cuts in our budget, and the community came together through a series of educational meetings, figured out and recommended to the school board what cuts should be made in our school. And in that process, this process of figuring out another solution, charter school was explored. Maybe there was a way to operate an experiment or something at the local level. We just couldn't find anything that worked as well as simply dividing ourselves off and having a district.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome. You live in a beautiful part of the state. I would like to know how many students would be in the Ion School District, and then how many are in the Heppner School District? I mean, if that's...
Well, Heppner is part of the whole Marl County School District. How many students do you have in Marl County?
22. I think there's 2,200 total students in our district.
In
all of Marl County.
2,200.
And Ion is approximately 160 students, K through 12.
160. Okay. And you know that many years ago we consolidated, you know.
Where?
because we wanted to get away from, you know, more government and more spending of money. And I'm looking at a statement that I have from the Secretary of State, and it's saying that schools that are 500 or fewer, the Oregon average dollar spent per student is right around, well, the average is $5,500. And then for the Morrow County, it would be $4,200. So it's over $1,000 more per student when you go from a larger school district to a smaller school district.
But we're one and the same at this moment in time. We as a school inside the Morrow County School District are collecting small school funds. So is Heppner, part of the Heppner school system. And that won't change as a separate district. And I realize, I think the state's level of funding holds constant or at the level you're willing to fund us. It's our problem as a community to figure out how to operate and stay alive as a school and function within the restraints of funding within the state. And now, we've always said to the Morrow County School District and the community as a whole that we expect to run a school district that works. You know, last year 100% of our children passed the SIM in Oregon, the only school in the state to have that happen. And we've had a school of excellence because the parents are involved. And I would tell you that if we're too small at some point, we'll face that reality. But we don't believe we are. We believe that we're not any more expensive inside or outside of Morrow County School District. I think that if they were to close us down and transfer, by the time they pass costs back to the state for transportation reimbursement and all the other interrelated costs, I don't think there's a huge saving for this. Or there won't be any savings, I don't believe, in the end. I think it's very close to...
Follow up. Well, I just want to point out, you are going to have more overhead, there's no question, because you'll have to have a superintendent, even though the superintendent may be the same as the principal, like we had in my district.
Right.
But the average for a school district between 500 or fewer students, the range of cost is from $3,900, which is the lowest, which you seem to think would be very, you can run your school district very, very frugally, up to $21,000 per student. That's the range. So I think that's something that you really need to take a look at, as well as have you taken into account the property tax issue, the revenue. I mean, what the revenues for what would become the...
We've explored all this. Like I said, we hired a couple of retired superintendents from the Pendleton area. We researched the viability of operating. You need to understand that what the charge of for the coming operating year, what the policy of the Morrow County School District is that the Ione School generates on those children so many dollars, and Ione will operate on that, short of administration and overhead being charged back against those dollars. So today, if we were to not have this happen and we were operating next year in Morrow County, we would operate at the same level of dollars as our students are taking in. That's a requirement to stay alive as a school within the Morrow County School District. We've explored that. We understand that that's a difficult issue. Also, we are about 7% of the student population, and we're a little bit, you'll notice in the bill there's a number of about 7.34% as the division of assets and liabilities. That number is basically what the tax base. Our tax base for our area of the Ione proposed school district is about 7% of the property tax base, and we're going to have 7% of the students. And we think it's very feasible. I mean, we did not do this lightly. We did not pursue this lightly.
And one final follow-up.
Sure, follow-up.
Has the voters, I mean, have you actually voted? Who's made this decision?
We presented to the registered voters in Morrow County a petition to file to the ESD requesting, which would be part of this requirement of this bill, that we have this petition. This petition is completed. And 80% of the registered voters in the affected area signed it. We also, overall, had 10% of all registered voters in Morrow County sign it, and we did it in 10 days. I'm confident that we have the support. The other communities realize that Ione is a unique town unto itself, and that for our future, for our economic viability, for us to be there as a community to attract business, you know, to create jobs and have families there, we need the school, and the taxpayers and the local folks are very much aware of it.
Other questions? Wondering, Mr. Fredrickson, you might be able to answer this. We had something in our packet on revenue impact showing that there would be $187,000 lost for Morrow County because the Heppner High School would no longer be considered a small school. Are you aware of that, or have you heard that there'd be a loss?
I've heard that talk, and I need to know the rationale why Heppner would lose its status, because I don't understand why it would when the student population has not changed at Heppner.
Well, I think the idea is that you'd have the increase in having the Ione kids moving over there.
I think one thing that wasn't taken into consideration is the large transportation cost. We're going to be transporting, and that wasn't taken into that figure. That figure is, and we're not confident of that figure, but that figure apparently is based on the thought of 7 through 12 and Ione being closed. We're not sure whether that's the case, but we know that the impact of the state on transportation would be significant.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I'm not sure who I'm directing this question to, but we went over very quickly the reason for the need to make some change in the first place. And I suspect I'm missing some history that got us to the place where you went out with the petition.
Right.
And I suspect the history has something to do with discussion happening perhaps in the Morrow County School Board about the future of Ione. I guess what I'm really wondering about is, why can't you leave things the way they are now? Why do we need to do any kind of a change? What's the point of it?
Well, with declining revenue coming into our budgets as the economics in the state have deteriorated and continue to be a concern for all of us, there was talk of consolidation. There was never a vote at the board level, and I think that's what spurred the community of Ione is a fear that if not this year, next year, if not next year, the following year, and I think that they wanted to take a proactive approach and get it done if they could and make sure that they could protect their school.
I also think we have a 35-year history of this issue arising every 5 to 7 years since we've been consolidated. And I want you to know that since this came up last fall, we have had people come who wanted to live in our community, looked at purchasing property, and have simply walked away and went somewhere else because we have this uncertainty. We have a dairy that's going to grow out there and double its workforce. We have a windmill project that looks to be 35 full-time employees within a short distance of our school. And, you know, we have people that can't commit themselves to going ahead and buying a house and putting their kids in school and driving the distance. We have people every year that we're moving into our community, and we're freezing up right now because we don't have this issue settled. And we have, for at least 10 years, had this issue arise every so often. And to me, we lack an identity because of it. We lack that guarantee that we're a town in the community. We need that identity. We need that certainty to make some progress. And because we have a great little community, and we offer a lot for those that want to live there. And I'm a farmer. I live outside the community. The future of my business is probably not relevant to the community, but not having the community is relevant to me.
Okay.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to pursue this same issue. The school board, if I understand what you said earlier, signed on to this bill last night.
That's right.
And is that a recognition that you can't trust yourself not to close the school in the future if the situation continues to get worse, or an acknowledgement that there really needs to be a separate organization, or what would you say?
Well, I think there's a lot of unknowns, and I'm not sure I can answer your question in a fashion that would satisfy you, but we don't know what the funding is going to be from the state level, and so I guess from our perspective, from the start of this process, we as a board in our discussion has said it's fine if Ione wants to do this. You know, Morrow County is a very complicated school district. We actually have four communities within the district. It's very broad spread geographically, and in the north end of Morrow County continues to grow, and the south end has been it's been hard on us to administrate, I guess. And so from the start, the board's position has go ahead and let Ione do this if they can, but let's do this well enough that it doesn't impact the rest remaining district. It would make it easier for us to administrate, I think, and the people of Ione have done a tremendous amount of work on this, and we've spent a lot of time together to get our letter of understanding, which is the guideline for this process. So there's been a lot of discussion over months. So this isn't a knee-jerk reaction. It's been well thought out, and we think it's probably the best way to deal with it at this time with all the unknowns that we have in our everything that we're trying to do.
If I make
sure,
a couple more, if I may, just to see if I can make sense out of it. It sounds like what you're suggesting is that you're satisfied with the division of assets and liabilities based on the letter of understanding, and that the board is willing to allow Ione to essentially take the risk that they're going to be able to actually operate this school, given the exigencies of state funding, not knowing what the future is going to be. Is that a fair statement, or have I missed it somehow?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? What? Representative Moss Anderson.
I guess is more for the small school. Wouldn't it be more advantageous somehow to keep Ione High School, or, you know, I understand that, but to be a part of a bigger district so you could take advantage of sports or activities or the choirs or, you know, all that's involved when you have more students?
Well, I guess as somebody who grew up there in the community, I mean, grew up, left, and came back, and I think that I understand the advantages of a large school. I mean, I do understand that. But I also believe there are great advantages to a small community. And I believe that a community with as much parental and community interest as we have, that some of those gaps are being filled. They always have been. The community will fill those gaps. They'll find the community is... you know, we've formed a foundation that is hoped to help with some of those things that maybe we need to fill in the gaps that we can't do through the school district or through our own school district. And it's my belief that we've always ended up with well-educated kids. I realize that we probably have focused more on basics than maybe some of the broad strokes, but I went off to college as an average student that... like to play sports, but I did great at college and didn't feel like I was a step behind anyone. And I look at the graduates we have today, and I think they're in the same shape. We have honor students that are doing great at this university right here and all across the state. And we have a history of our graduates going on to higher education, and we must be doing something right, and we just don't want to lose it.
One follow-up.
Sure, follow-up.
Do you offer free lunch, free breakfast? You know, there's a requirement.
All those programs are in place in the whole district, and we explored that as part of this, and we see it as no problem.
So how many students do you have, do you know, on the free breakfast?
We're not a huge number.
How many are in the high school?
There's around 60 students in the high school.
So and do you know how many are on the free breakfast?
You know, countywide, it's about... almost half, I think, in Morrow County, countywide, but it's different in each school, and I can't tell you school by school.
Okay. But would you say it's a dozen, or would you say...
I think it's more than that. I mean, I think we have a certain amount that would qualify.
But it's 50%.
I think within the district as a whole, yes, I think that's...
But probably not that high in Ione.
I would think the South End, Kepner and Ione both probably have less than the North End do as a whole. There's...
I don't know if that's right or not.
Good question. We don't have the answer for you.
We could get that information for
that's
you.
Right. I was just curious.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Just to check on one portion of the bill, talking about there on the very last line of the first page about if you folks can't agree on distribution of assets and liabilities, then in the next page it talks about the superintendent of public instruction or a designee of the superintendent will have to be making that decision. Do you have disagreement on the division of assets and liabilities, or I mean, have you gotten that far at this point?
We've been meeting. We're just starting that phase now that we have a little more confidence that we've moved forward. After this bill moved out of the Senate, then we had a meeting with the members of the school board, and we've started looking at how we would go about doing that. It's my hope that we come to a conclusion. I mean, we worked very hard to create a letter of understanding. I guess I'm inclined to say that, I can't say that we know for sure that every issue will be settled before we get through that, but it would be my hope that it's one or two small issues that, there's the possibility that there's a couple points that we can't come to agreement. I don't know what they are, but it would be my assumption that we're not going to place a large burden on somebody at the other end of this.
Okay. And if, in a case like this, I mean, what would your interpretation be of that provision where it's the designee of the superintendent? Could it be like a local judge or arbitrator?
It could be anybody the superintendent of public instruction chooses to have.
Somebody maybe local, though, that could help be involved in that decision as opposed to having it come from the Board of Education or coming from the superintendent's office?
We had a long discussion about whether that should be a judge or... But we thought at the time that the superintendent of public instruction was someone with a charge to be responsible for school districts and education, and we assumed that that person could designate somebody that they felt confident would do the job. I don't think we assumed that it would be on the shoulders of the Department of Ed for sure.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm still after details, I guess, a little bit. You describe your community as a growing community. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the windmill and the increase in the dairy and all of that. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit, either of you, about the physical facilities you have for the school there, what the capacity of it is, whether you anticipate large... capital construction needs or maintenance needs in the immediate future, things of that kind.
Okay, well, we're at a unique point countywide. A bond levy was passed to build buildings in all four communities to upgrade our facilities. And the Ione community has a brand new elementary school being built. It'll be completed by the end of the summer, countywide bond. The high school was built in the late 50s, but it's in excellent condition and been maintained, and we're assuming that we have good facilities for a long period of time.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you for your help. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And Representative Greg Smith and Senator Jenny Burdick, you come forward.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Doyle, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Greg Smith. I had the distinct pleasure of representing District 57, which includes all of Morrow County. And I say all of Morrow County because that includes not only Ione, but also the town of Lexington, Heppner, which is my hometown, Boardman, Harrigan, small little community called Hardman, and all of the rural area. And I have to tell you, I'm here because this is a good piece of legislation that's trying to address a very important issue in one of my communities. And I have to tell you, if I thought that this piece of legislation was detrimental to Morrow County, I would not be here. But that is not the case. I was thinking as I came in here late, and I do apologize again for that, that this bill very easily could have been in Representative Patty Smith's committee in Trade and Economic Development. because the Ione school, or the proposed Ione school district, is very much an economic development project, as much as it is a fine school. Please understand, this school is the heart of this small little community. This school is what garners the support. This is what rallies the troops in this community. It's interesting. You can always tell when there's an out-of-town football game or basketball game because the town is empty. These folks support their schools. They support their teachers. And most importantly, they support their kids. And I think that's why you have Senate Bill 372 in front of you today. I'm not going to carry on very long. You folks know what this bill is about. You know why it's here. Ask for your support. Ask for you to support the children of Ione. They need our help. This community needs our help. This is an important bill to me, and I ask you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of Representative Smith? Okay. Representative Berger.
I don't have a question, but I do want to comment to you the wonderful mail that I've received from my own and the thoughtfulness that they have given to this project. And I couldn't help but in reading one of them when I finished, I thought, gee, it makes you want to move to Ione.
We can find you a home there. Representative, if you have children or grandchildren that can enter the school, we will take them as well.
Okay, thank you. Representative Flores.
Question. Thank you. Representative, can you give us a sense for what the community position is, as it seems very supportive from both Morrill County School District as well as Ione? Is there an undercurrent of discontent with this?
Well, it's interesting. Thank you, Chair Doyle, Vice Chair Flores. This morning I actually received an email from a citizen in Irrigan, which is about 40 miles away, and the email is very interesting. It said, Representative Smith, please do everything you can to help out the community of Ione. And please understand, that says a lot. The rationale for that was is folks in Morrill County understand how important this school is to this community. And I think there's a true sense in the community at this point that we need to do everything we can to support Ione. I live in Heppner. I represent the entire district. I get all the emails. And the underlying theme is we need to do what we can. If the community of Ione feels that this is the right move for them, which is what they're saying, then we need to do what we can to help them. And I have to tell you, and I look all of you in the eye, if there is one community in the state of Oregon that I truly thought could stand up and support its school through thick and thin, it's this community. Let me tell you. This community can do it. Thank you.
Representative Miles Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're in real tough economic times, and there are some things that we really have to do to be fiscally responsible. Right. And no one wants to pay more taxes, etc. But what is your response in knowing that a small school will cost quite a bit more per student than a larger school district?
Chair Doyle, Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, let me begin by saying that the establishment of the Ione School District is going to be completed in a very revenue-neutral manner. But also let me step back and say I think it's interesting that we're here in the Rules Committee talking about an education bill. When the fact of the matter is our schools are struggling. I've been in every one of my schools in my district, and I take great pride in saying that. I was in every one of my schools in my former district, and I take great pride in saying that. Rural Oregon, probably like the rest of the state, is very concerned about its schools, and I have to tell you there's probably three key issues, and one of those is figuring out how are we going to take care of our small schools.
You didn't really answer my question, but I'll accept that answer.
Representative Barnhart.
This is almost a follow-up, although I had it before the last question. Do you know, rough figures, what percentage of the school fund comes from the local property tax in Morrill County?
Offhand, Chair Doyle, Representative Barnhart.
Is it a quarter, a third, a half, three quarters? You don't know.
I cannot answer that question.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Smith. I know you have another committee, but it may help us if you can hang on here for a little bit.
Great. Thank you.
Listen to some of the other testimony. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. If you were afraid that I was going to testify in opposition to this and maybe need a rebuttal, I can put your fears aside because I'm here to speak in favor of this bill. For the record, I'm Ginny Burdick, and I represent Senate District 18, which is Southwest Portland and Tigard. So it would be quite legitimate for you to wonder what I'm doing here to testify on behalf of Ione School. And it really goes back 10 years ago when I was in the community on Cycle Oregon, and we actually stayed in the schoolyard. And while school was not in session at that time, the community made a very deep impression on me. The first thing I noticed about Ione was that little sign leading into town. I believe it said population 220 at the time. Now I think it's up, way up past 300, 340 or so. And I thought, I did my math, and I realized that at 2000 we outnumbered the residents of Ione something like 10 to 1. And I thought, well, I wonder what dinner's going to be like tonight. And it was wonderful. The whole community banded around this community project. And, of course, Cycle Oregon is a fundraiser for communities. And it's a civic exercise to take all these ragtag bicyclists who'd ridden 90 miles uphill that day through Heppner that particular day. And the school particularly made a deep impression on me because it was very clear. It's right in the center of town. It was truly the center of town. And as a person who ran in an urban and suburban area, on education as an issue, I cannot sit here and tell you that all I care about is education in urban and suburban school districts, because that's not what education's about in Oregon. Education is about all children. And studies have shown that small schools do a better job of educating children, especially at the high school level. And it's just, when we have a little pearl like this, it's just important that we not let that fall by the wayside because of budget crises. I personally am willing to put more revenue in the system with my vote for my schools, which are also in trouble, and schools like Ione. We're all in this boat together, and I just don't think we can be throwing precious gems like this overboard because of our budget situation. There are other tough choices we'll have to make because of it, offsetting program cuts, etc. But when you have something like Ione School, you just don't throw it away. And I'm here to tell you that as an outside observer. I can't exactly call myself objective because I fell in love with the place the minute I got there. And in answer to your question, Representative Flores, about the community involvement, I'll just read you a couple of sentences from an email I got from Ann Mortar, who heard me speak on the Senate floor and actually was the coordinator of the Cycle Oregon volunteer group that did such a good job for us. And she said in her email, prior to this current effort to save our town and school, Cycle Oregon had been the high watermark for community effort and involvement. I served as volunteer coordinator for that event and was positively overwhelmed with people willing to do whatever we needed whenever we needed it. With that said, however, I will tell you that the determination, resolve, and spunk shown by our community these last few months has been just as gratifying. I am just so darn proud to be associated with these people as we work to save the heart of our community. And that's what this school is, and that's why I'm here to speak on behalf of this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Questions? Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Senator Burdick. I want your reaction on, as you know, this starts a precedent. This bill starts a precedent. And that means any other school district that had problems could come up with a bill to secede. I would love to see Ione High School stay, no matter what. You know, I think that there's as much heart in that community that somehow they would be able to make it survive. So why do you want to start a precedence like this that would have a huge policy impact for all school districts?
Thank you for the question, Chair Doyle, Representative Anderson. There already is precedent for some kind of lenience on the consolidation. Black Butte School is another school that I'm personally familiar with because we have a family cabin in Camp Sherman, and that Black Butte School is in Camp Sherman. I think the people who are trying to accomplish what is being accomplished in Ione have gone to great lengths to make it revenue neutral. Now, can we guarantee, and I myself struggled with the bill, to be honest, because of this very concern that can we really afford it? I believe that they have done everything possible to make this revenue neutral. Now, can we guarantee that it's absolutely going to be absolutely revenue neutral? I'm not sure we can guarantee that at the end of the day, their commitment, will be fulfilled exactly. I believe that there is a very good chance that it will, and if other districts go to this incredible effort to make it revenue neutral, that they ought to be rewarded for that effort. And I think that this whole community has, they haven't just come and asked for a handout. They've really tried to manage it in such a way that there will not be impact to the overall school funding picture. And I commend them for that.
Further questions? Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Check Bennett.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I want to make very clear, I don't want to be Scrooge today, but I am going to express some opposition to the bill. I've listened to the testimony regarding Ione. I have been to Ione a number of times over the years and think it's a beautiful small town. When I was in the legislature, I represented a rural portion of the Willamette Valley in the east counties of Clackamas, Marion, Lynn, and Lane. I watched as federal timber policy, state timber policy, and a recession did terrible damage to those communities. I watched as communities lost their high schools, lost their, in many ways, lost their identity. So I'm understanding what's being said, and I feel strongly about these issues. That's not what happened here. That's not what's happening here. This legislation is being brought because a school board talked about how to deal with the failure of the state to provide enough money for education of children in Morrow County and other parts of the state as they see their spending patterns. Now, we all disagree or agree on what the level of spending should be, but in this case, the question was not a vote on whether or not to close Ione High School. That vote never occurred, which I find kind of stunning that we're here. I watched the vote to close your colleague Elaine Hobson's schools, the entire school district in Detroit, and merge up with Mill City. When it hit so hard in Detroit, they had to start looking seriously at what to do about their community. And there was actually a vote. There is no vote here. This is prospective. And I think the thing that worries me the most, and I'm hoping you'll make clear on the record, because I think this bill is going to move, but I hope you will make clear on the record, this bill is and I think it does because of amendments, is sort of idiosyncratic enough, just specific enough to Ione, that you are not reversing years of policy direction toward efficiency, consolidation when appropriate, and that you're not changing direction. If you are, you are. I mean, I hope you'll tell us that. That's not what you're telling us as we come to you and talk to you about school funding. But you're telling us, be more efficient, cut administrators, find new ways to do business. Here's how much you get, now resolve it locally. You're putting enormous pressure on these school boards, ultimately, as the primary funders, and I think that you need to be at least supportive enough of the school boards not to, on every case, overrule them. Now, I'm not going to suggest this is every case. This is one case, and I hope it's the first of very, very few if you decide to move this forward. I think it's unfortunate. Bills go where bills go. Bills are assigned where bills are assigned, and it was assigned to rules. But I've got to say, I think it's unfortunate this bill is not getting a thorough review of the educational impact of what's going on here. We believe that, and I think you'll hear testimony from others who understand this better than I do from the Department of Education, but our expectation is that by creating this very small school district, you're going to be essentially cutting programs by about $1,800 per student, because there is an economy of scale. And that's what happens when you change the size of school districts. And I trust completely that wiser heads in Ione than mine have gone through the realities of this, that former superintendents, who I represent and think are just real bright fellows, have had a chance to take a look at this and have determined, yes, they are correct. This will work. I hope they're right. I really do. But the numbers and the experience in Oregon don't indicate that to be correct. That in fact, when you look at the change in scale from the size of the Morrow County School District to the size of the proposed Ione School District at 160, you see a real change in the impact. Now, they may have found some new ways to do business, and I hope they have. I hope they don't need any administrators or administrative staff that you can find. And I think they're out there, the superintendent, principal, teacher, custodian. And I think they're out there. And that'll be good. That's a good thing. Yeah, but they're going to have to deal with that problem. I hope that they have, in all of their discussions, been very honest with themselves about what those cuts in programs mean. And it's good to hear them say that they are expecting to provide a basic education. Because at the level of spending that's going to be available, there just is no extra cash for small school districts. There is small school help, but there's no small school district help that they'll be prepared for the impact of the change they're about to go into. And there is always the option they can go back. They can reverse the decision. So that's a good thing, too. This is not a you're cut loose and can't ever go home kind of thing. They do have that fallback position. I've got to agree with Senator Burdick, and I was pleased to note that Senator Burdick, as well as Representative Smith, signed on for a $6 billion spending level for public education in this state, and they're willing to support the revenues it'll take to do that, because, frankly, with that kind of support, this may well work. This might work at $6 billion level of spending. In fact, I just submit to you that if we were at $6 billion this round, if we'd stayed at $5.2 billion, rather than the substantial reductions of the six special sessions down to 4.8, we wouldn't be here at all. There would have never even been the suggestion of taking a look at an economy in the Morrow County School District. Again, it was a suggestion, a discussion. I'll tell you where you'll really have an interesting time is if in the future you start hearing from the communities or the schools where they want to change bus routes, and a group of citizens hire themselves a lobbyist, because I think all of us who have watched education know changing bus routes can be almost as unnerving to a community. Try getting rid of a popular coach. try eliminating a portion of your school athletic program, all of those other kinds of economies that have been necessitated by our current economic crisis could well lead to this becoming an issue that you will take up as part of your regular work as the 90-member school board of Oregon, because that could well be where this leads you. So I hope you will at least clarify the record on this. I guess I'm asking if you decide to move it. This is a one-time. It's very unusual. We think maybe the Morrow County School District actually meant they were going to close the school, maybe if they voted. Some sort of way of clarifying that this is limited to this case as you can define it. That's all we'd be asking. Or we think there'll be a lineup, particularly if this funding crisis isn't resolved. So, thank you very much.
Questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, would you agree that part of the problem is that we've not decided what we're going to do in Oregon with our two different, very different problems of declining enrollment and high growth? Declining enrollment is creating small schools. So are we going to consolidate all of these schools that are now the Reedsports and the Coquilles and the Myrtle Points? And
Representative Doyle, Representative Berger, I guess I would disagree with you that that's what this case represents. This case, I'm going to argue strenuously and try to stay on message, is about IOM. It's very specific to IOM. They're not describing a small school brought about by declining enrollment or changes of that kind of demographic change. I certainly agree with you there are other issues going on around us, but not in this bill. This bill is specific to IOM, so I think it's only fair to stay, if you see what I'm saying in terms of a policy discussion, I think keeping this confined is very important.
I follow up, Mr. Chairman. I think I was addressing more your comment that there would be people in line wanting to do similar things in the future.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't express that clearly enough.
Ms. Chairman, Representative Berger, certainly a problem, but a bigger problem is the lack of stable and adequate funding. Bottom line, stable and adequate funding will make a difference in a whole variety. It will cover, as it has for years, a batch of other problems that exist out there in terms of declining enrollment or other issues like that. But there is also, and I think it's important that you also be aware of this, and I'll just use this as an opportunity, a bill has come out of your House Education Committee, House Bill 3171, that's been referred to Ways and Means, that is a task force addressing the issue contained in this bill. House Bill 3171 is a look at the organization of school districts around the state. I mean, if you were to start with a blank map and draw school districts, whether it is county or urban or rural or ESDs as an overlay, this is not the map you draw that exists today. And part of, I think, what's going to go on in this task force is addressing the kinds of problems you're describing, Representative Berger, the kinds of problems the people of IOM are concerned about, whether or not, you know, small communities should face closure of their school when it is the heart of their community. Should Detroit have lost its school district in a merger? Should there have been a way to resolve? Should there have been a different configuration, either drawn or funding? Those kinds of things are available to be discussed in that task force. This bill is premature. It's premature because there was no vote by that school board, and you all haven't had a chance to have your task force operate on just the basic configuration of school districts in the state if this task force is successfully passed.
Further questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Do you know what the division of the school fund is in Morrow County between property taxes and state resources?
Representative Doyle, Representative Barnhart, no, I don't.
Thank you.
Yes,
sir. Representative Forrest.
Thank you. Mr. Bennett, during the time that this bill was on the Senate side for a couple of months and then the hearings and what have you, and the overwhelming passage by the Senate. Were you involved in the dialogue over there and testimony and follow-up? Then were you presenting the same type of testimony you're giving us here? Were you supportive or not supportive?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Flores, I was not supportive. Gave fairly similar testimony. The only thing I didn't know, I thought this was a more unusual situation than it actually is. I actually thought by the testimony I'd heard that there had been a vote by the school board to close this school, which I found just kind of personally, on a personal level, kind of troubling. But when I just found out a couple of days ago there'd never even been a vote by the school board, I felt less troubled. This school wasn't at the point of closure. I actually thought there was a point of closure at hand. And we had argued there was another bill over in the Senate as well that looked at a broader policy of how to dissolve school districts. We had heard from Lincoln County, North and South, South Lincoln County, there had been a task force over in Lincoln County looking at ways of dealing with budget shortfalls. And South Lincoln, I think it was Walport High School, had been looked at. Someone had just said in this meeting, how about Walport High School? You know, why are we keeping it open? And there was a group of people here saying, geez, we need a bill. And that bill didn't advance, in part because I think 3171 offers a place for us to go in terms of discussion. But I don't think there's anything different in what I'm saying now than what I said over there. I'm just trying to be nicer about it over here, I guess.
Further questions? Mr. Bennett, one of the pieces of your lobbying efforts that I wanted to clarify was hearing that you were stating that this bill was a product of something that the OEA was involved in as opposed to the community members. So you didn't make that comment?
No. Okay. I try not to represent the OEA. They do a superb job themselves without my help.
Okay. All right. Further questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And Steve Novick and Brian Reeder.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Novick. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Department of Education, and with me is Brian Reeder. We appreciate this opportunity to address one very narrow issue that the superintendent has concerns about and also a broader issue. The narrow issue, which frankly, I offer my personal apologies to the committee for not having addressed previously in the Senate. We understood that the parties were near a resolution of all issues in this matter. And so we thought that this portion of the bill was kind of irrelevant, that it now appears that that was wrong, and it may still be relevant based on the testimony you've heard here today. The bill states at the bottom of the first page, last sentence on the bottom of the first page, continuing on to page 2, that if the persons appointed under this subsection are unable to agree unanimously upon the distribution of assets and liabilities, the decision on the distribution of assets shall be made by the superintendent of public instruction or designee of the superintendent. That is not a responsibility that the superintendent seeks or really feels equipped to carry out. And if there's accounting issues involved that need to be revisited, I think the department would have no choice but to hire an accountant. I called an accountant named Jeff Guilfoy here in Salem, who's been rattling around in the vicinity of state government for a while, and his off the top of his head estimate was that if an accounting exercise was necessary, that might cost $10,000 or $20,000, and that's not something we budgeted for. So I respectfully throw the superintendent and the department upon the mercy of the committee and ask that that sentence be deleted, because although I must confess that I have no particular alternative in mind, I'd suggested that the district boundary board might be appropriate, but I talked to John Marshall of OSBA, who said that he was quite confident the district boundary board didn't want to make that decision either. And although obviously the bill states that the superintendent may designate a designee, that too would be a political choice fraught with perils, and we don't know if we could find somebody who for free would be willing to do that. So that's the narrow issue that we wanted to address. We also, the superintendent has not taken a position for or against this bill, but she did want to sort of raise a word of caution And I think that she means sympathy with much of what Mr. Bennett just said. A few months ago, the committee might recall that there was a front page headline in the Oregonian, you know, Secretary of State audit shows that Oregon schools spend less than the national average on non-instruction costs. And although the department had some quibbles with the way non-instruction costs were defined, if you look into the body of that Secretary of State's audit, which I think Representative Lonis Anderson is referring to, you do see that there are higher overhead costs in smaller districts. And that does not mean that in this case the parties have configured a district that's extremely spare and efficient, and we're not addressing the specifics of this. Mr. Bennett did raise the point that you might be establishing a precedent, and although the superintendent is very sympathetic to Ione or any other community that feels like it's in danger of losing a school that's the heart of the community, and for that matter, she's also sympathetic to neighborhoods in Portland that feel like, for budget reasons, they're losing a school that's the heart of their neighborhood. She also does want the committee to be aware that there are economies of scale involved, as some members of the committee have noted. And Mr. Reeder would like to take a few minutes to talk about some study. Mr. Reeder is one of our, he's our key numbers cruncher, and we'd like for him to have an opportunity to talk about some of the research he's done on economies of scale and the higher cost per student in smaller districts. Thank you.
Chair Doyle, members of the committee, I'm Brian Reeder with the Department of Education. First of all, I will answer Representative Barnhart's question about the share of revenue coming to Morrill County School District. I looked at that. I glanced at that this morning. They raise slightly over $4 million locally. They get slightly under $10 million from the state, so the local share, 4 over 14, roughly 30% local, which mirrors the state average quite closely. To the issue of economies of scale, last fall, under the a requirement of the prior legislative session, the department conducted a study of the cost of small schools, and in doing that, we also looked at the cost of small school districts, trying to isolate the effects of those two things that are really quite different forces that cause costs to vary with size of schools versus size of districts. What we found is that really the minimum cost school district size is in the ballpark of 9,000 students and rises quite rapidly as you get to sizes below about 300 students. The estimate that Mr. Bennett mentioned, $1,800, is my estimate of how much more it would cost per student to go to a district of size 160, which is where Ione would be if this bill were to pass, compared to a district size of roughly 2,300, which is where the whole Morrill County School District is now. It is true, though, that there will be no more money for Ione. They won't get additional money through the state school formula. They will get roughly the same amount of money they're getting now, but they will have, in my estimation, higher costs. So the way they can deal with those higher costs without additional money from the state, there are a few of them. They can cut their programs. They can, if they have a model that's extremely efficient, I think Chuck mentioned the superintendent, principal, teacher, janitor model. They can raise more money locally if they choose to. The story that the department would like to tell, though, is that they will not get more money from the state, but they are likely to have higher costs. And I think they understand that. I spent quite a bit of time on the phone yesterday with some people from Morrill County and from Ione, and they have done their homework very well. They understand what's going on. They know they're not going to get more money. What the real trade-off here is one that I think was pointed out very clearly. On the one side, you have the cost of running schools. On the other side, you have the importance of schools to their community. This one is pretty easy to put numbers on. This one is very difficult to put numbers on, but we know it's important. That's the policy question that's before you.
Mr. Reeder, can you address the shift since Heppner would lose $187,000 because it's no longer going to be a classified small school?
I think that's misinformation, Mr. Chair. Heppner is now a small school. It will continue to be a small school if Ione splits off to be its own district. If Ione and if this bill does not pass and Ione does not become an independent district and the two high schools merge, they will become a larger high school. They will still get small school money, but they will get less than they're getting now. The combined high school will get less additional money from the small school correction than the sum of the two schools are getting now, but they will still get that money.
Okay. What we're seeing from the Legislative Revenue Office is saying that if Ione does not become a separate district and the high school is closed, the small high school weight for Heppner will decrease because it will be a larger school. This would shift about $187,000 from Morrow County School District to all other school districts unless pending legislation passes.
That's correct. I think that's consistent with what I intended to just say.
Okay, so what did I miss then on the $187,000?
The combined school will still get the small school correction, but they will get a smaller one. It will be smaller by $187,000, but it won't be eliminated entirely.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reeder, I have several questions about the department study that was done on cost. Did you consider salaries and benefits in your cost study?
Chair Doyle, Representative Close, yes, we did.
And is it true that salaries and benefits for school districts across the state averages between 84% and 86% of their budget?
Chair Doyle, Representative Close, in that ballpark, roughly 80% is the rule of thumb we use. It does vary from district to district, and on average, it's about 80%.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
I believe the statistics I saw when I sat on the subcommittee was 84% to 86%, and it is 86% in my district. My question to you, a district could decide, could it not, to use less than 85%. They could go at 80%. They could go at 75% salaries and benefits. Wouldn't that lower their costs of and allow them that option of putting money in other places?
Chair Doyle, Representative Close, districts can spend their money just about however they choose, yes.
Okay, so I guess my point is, in your study saying that bigger districts, there's economies of scale, those districts are also paying higher salaries, are they not?
Chair Doyle, Representative Close, are you asking do bigger districts pay higher salaries?
I'm thinking of the Reynolds School District, I believe, is the highest salaries that I've seen. That is a big district. It's a big urban district, is it not? Compared to a little school district like this that could decide not to give those types of salaries, they would have to cut their costs somewhere, and that's their biggest cost, isn't it?
Chair Doyle, Representative Close, yes. I mean, districts can attempt to cut their costs wherever they can, but keep in mind there is a labor market out there, and if they cut their salaries too much, they have a very difficult time attracting teachers. So to simply say they can cut a particular cost whenever they like to, I think it is an oversimplification of the situation they face. All districts operate in a labor market.
But would not the cost of living be lower in that part of Oregon than in an urban area?
Representative Doyle, Representative Close, in general, the cost of living in rural Oregon is lower than it is in, although Portland is an exception, the cost of living in Portland is significantly higher. I misspoke. Yes, it is. The cost of living in general is lower in rural areas than it is in urban areas in Oregon.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Osborne.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Osborne. I'm a Portland lawyer. My practice is a predominantly education law representation of school districts. And in this particular instance, I was asked to give some technical advice to the people from my own as to how to go about dealing with the creation of a separate school district, we concluded early on that it would be necessary for legislative action, and what's more, we considered it to be appropriate, particularly in view of the fact that the legislature has, over a period of many years, considered the direction to be in favor of consolidation rather than in creation of small districts or even allowing small districts to continue to exist. As a general rule, general rules are very comforting. We don't have to analyze how they apply or what they do to communities. Presumably, if there are economies of scale from larger districts, we'd be best off with one school district and everybody going to the same school. But obviously, that's not the way schools work in this country or in any other. Schools began in this country, and we had small school districts because starting a school was a local thing. People decided that they needed a school because they had children that needed to be educated, and the fact that somebody else in a distant community might have a school was irrelevant. They needed one for their community. And as time has gone on, we've talked about things like economies of scale, and I've been involved in a number of school district mergers. And generally, they're a good thing. But you can't refuse to look at, and I'm not suggesting that you are refusing to look at, but you can't say we're going to follow the general rule regardless of wherever it leads us, regardless of what it does to communities. Another general rule that we concluded some time back was that it would be fair, as long as the legislature was apportioning money to education, it would be fair that every student gets roughly the same number of dollars per student for his or her education. The fair rule has nothing to do with the cost of educating students. So we're starting out with a couple of general rules that I think we have to look at what they do in the community and how the community responds to the application of those general rules. I can't imagine a situation in which you'd have a local community which has thought this issue out more carefully than Ione has. We don't want to have a lot of small school districts. Now, this is not the first time that the legislature has been asked to divide a school district. The most recent case was, I think, two sessions ago when the legislature authorized the creation of two school districts in Columbia School District. So that's been done, and the bill, Senate Bill 372, was essentially patterned after that legislation. It isn't going to happen very often. Most times it doesn't make any sense. In this case, it does. Mr. Bennett testified that this bill's premature because the school district hadn't said they were going to. They just talked about it. I think Mr. Bennett's been to a lot of school board meetings and knows when school boards are serious about what they're going to do or not. We have to bring this bill to you at a time when it will make a difference. If we waited 2 years from now, the deed would be done. And then we'd say, then Mr. Bennett would testify, well, they're too late now. Mr. Bennett also testified before the Senate committee that perhaps he'd made a mistake in, or shouldn't have signed himself up as opposing the bill. Although he doesn't seem to have any problem opposing the bill now. The principal issue that I want to address, I think, is a fairly small one, which is that raised by the Department of Education. I take responsibility for this. We got into a situation in which it was clear that the best way to have the division of assets of the two districts divided was to have the two groups get together and hash it out. But what if they can't decide? And so we provided that if we can't get five of the six members to agree, then we have to have somebody to break the tie. or to break the impasse. And so we suggested, who better than the superintendent of public instruction, or obviously Superintendent Castillo isn't expected to act as Solomon, so she could designate someone. And my experience in state government was I have never seen the slightest reluctance by state agencies to bill people for work that is done, and it certainly would be appropriate in this case that if the superintendent of public instruction were to designate someone, that would be based upon billing the parties to pay for the cost of that decision. We hope that won't be necessary. It may not be necessary. But we did want to have a potential deadlock breaker, and so that's what we did. I don't think that that's an issue that ought to hold up the bill. You've seen the effort that has gone into this, the decision that's been made by the IOWN people that they will commit themselves to having their, to maintain the school. You've seen the agreement by the school board that seems to be the best way to handle the situation. The school board has decided it's not economic for them to continue to run the IOWN school as a high school and middle school, and that it would be it is so uneconomic that they look at busing students all the way to Heppner. I think that you have to trust the people who are out there who know what the situation is and give them the benefit and the respect of considering their decision. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you. Do you know what the budget of a school district for 100 of 160 students would be?
I do not know.
Does anyone in the room? No.
Looks like there's some folks that
I'd like
would
that.
Be dealing
I'd
with
like
this.
I'd like that question.
Wait.
No. This is Lisa Reitman from the IOWN.
Okay.
Sorry.
Just a minute. Mr. Osborne, we're going to have more questions for you, so
all right.
Just keep to there. Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Doyle and Representative Mona Sanderson. My name is Lisa Reitman. I'm from my own. I've worked on this committee, the self-determination committee, for several months. The budget that was drafted for us by Mr. Elman Yeh and Mr. Terry Carty, who are both retired superintendents from Umatilla County, the total budget was approximately $215,000.
I'm sorry, 1.2.
1.2.
1.2.
$1.2 million.
Okay. Yes, follow up. I've been trying to do some number crunching, and maybe this is not the way to do it. You said that Morrow County had $14 million of local and state funds. So what I took 160 over 2,200, comparing it to 2,200, that comes actually to 1/55th of the budget, and that only comes up to 19,000. So when you say you're revenue neutral, you're just saying it's a 1.2 million. So really, the 1.2 million of 14 million, that means you're actually having a much bigger percentage per student than the original numbers. And so I'm not convinced then, at least from the numbers that have been thrown out now, that you're going to be revenue neutral. And I was just wondering how you could do that.
Representative Doyle, Representative Anderson, I think that the question is missing a step there. We're talking about the percentage of number of students being approximately 7%. However, if you look at the percentage of the ADMW, it's 8.9%. So there's a big step there between the number of actual students in the ADMW.
Yeah. Okay.
And that would be a reflection of the small school grant, probably.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, thank you. And further questions?
That percentage again, I'm sorry. 8.9%.
8.9% of the NIW.
8.9% of the NIW. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for Mr. Osborne? Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Osborne, I wonder if you could comment. We have a letter from John W. Osborne, attorney in Portland, and he makes a statement in the letter, when Morrill County School District...
That's me.
I'm sorry. That's you. All right. Then I'll ask you this question.
I'll do my best to answer.
When you said, when Morrill County School District concluded it was no longer cost-effective to continue to operate the high school program in Ione, then the committee was working to do this separate thing. But my question is, I'm wondering how they concluded it was no longer cost effective. Did they write a letter? Was this a public meeting? We're told there was no vote, but I want to know how conclusive this was, because you're calling they concluded it was no longer cost effective.
There were numerous public hearings in which that was the clear sentiment of the board, and Mr. Fredrickson, a member of the board, has confirmed that today.
Was there anything like a resolution or anything in writing?
I don't think there was a final resolution, but that was clearly the direction in which the board was looking.
And
this bill makes it unnecessary for him to make that decision.
And fault, Mr. Chair?
Fault.
So that would all be in the public record? In the
yes.
Record. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just as perhaps follow-up to that particular point, and maybe this is where the staff summary note came, where it says there is concern that the Morrill County School District will close the Ione school due to financial pressures, this having been taken from the Senate side testimony.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Greg Smith. Do you have any concluding remarks before we close our public hearing?
Thank you, Chair Doyle. I actually do, I don't get worked up too often, but I have to tell you, I feel like there's been a little profiling going on here. Not racial profiling, not sexual profiling, but rural profiling. Comment was made that we're going to have a superintendent, principal, teacher, janitor. But let me tell you what, you may also have a state representative, janitor, groundskeeper, if that's what it takes to keep this school open. And let me tell you, as you look back at these folks here, they feel the same way. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. We talked about teacher salaries. The type of teachers we have in Ione are the type of teachers that if they had to donate 10 days to keep their school open, they would. These are the teachers that if they needed to make some necessary reductions, maybe go out and continue to purchase the supplies they're already purchasing, they would. Every one of these parents back there, if they were asked to show up on a Saturday and clean out the school, I can guarantee you they would all be there, plus their brothers, their sisters, their children, grandma and grandpa. And they'd have a potluck, and the job would get done. These are very capable individuals. You've heard over and over today that this is a very thoughtful bill, that the process has been very well thought through. And I want you to know, and I repeat this, if there was ever a community that could step up and make sure that their children get a quality education, it's the city of Ione and the community of Ione. So I ask for your support on Senate Bill 372. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now close the public hearing on Senate Bill 372. I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 372.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
I move Senate Bill 372.
I'd like to make an amendment, please.
Okay. The chair recognizes Representative Flores. And she
recommends
Senate Bill 372 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Los Anderson.
Thank you. I had an amendment drafted after the Department of Education called me regarding that one small piece of concern that they had. And basically the sentence, one sentence is deleted, and the liabilities assets issue would not then be the decision of the Department of Ed, but would still be at the local level. I feel strongly that we should incorporate this into the bill. Basically, it says that the decision will be made by a majority of the proponents and the Morrow School District. And that was why I wanted to make an amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Representative Barnhart. I have a question for Representative Monis Anderson. Has that been drafted?
Yes, I drafted it. I have already shared that with the chair. I've shared it with the proponent of the bill, the lobbyist. And so, yes, I have.
Was there a reason you're not moving it?
Currently, the motion before the committee is to pass Senate Bill 372 as is, with the due pass recommendation. Representative Barnhart.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think a motion to amend is in order. This is the place where amendments get done.
Right, and the chair is ruling that motion out of order. I'll tell you why. A couple reasons. First is that I think, have heard testimony that there is other alternatives that are available for the superintendent to designate someone to be making this decision. Part of that, the designation could be very well, could be what Representative Monis Anderson suggested. There are decisions made all the time where executives of agencies can go out to a community, for instance, like this. They find out that they don't have an agreement. Then, in this case, the superintendent could say, "Okay, each side can pick one or two people to be the decision makers. They can find volunteers to do it. They can find people actually in the community who have the interest, who have the background to know it. It's not something that's going to have to be done, from the Willamette Valley." Second thing is that we are also are looking at a timeline of getting this signed by the governor. Worst case scenario requires signature by May 20th, and that's based on looking at getting this division final by July 1/03. That's so that the boundary board can have 30 days to negotiate division, and if there is a problem making that decision, once again, the superintendent, as required by law, would have to make that decision. And with that in mind, we're not looking to amend this, so then we have to go back to the Senate for conference committee. Instead, we're going to see if we can get this passed on the floor and get it approved, so then it can go straight to the governor for signature. Representative Barnhart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. There are really two issues here. One of them is the substantive issue that you've been addressing. And the other one is the issue that I understand Representative Monis Anderson to be raising, and that if in fact she is raising it, I would also be concerned about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the parliamentary question of whether or not it's in order for an amendment to be placed, to be voted on in the committee. It's my contention from a parliamentary point of view that it is appropriate and within the rules of the committee to place an amendment even though there is a pending motion, and for the committee to vote on that amendment. And if I need to challenge the ruling of the chair and ask for the parliamentarian to give us a ruling on that, I would do that. But I think that's a separate issue than the substantive issue of whether the amendment ought to be approved. And I feel quite strongly about that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
Yes, I'm just wondering if it would not solve this as a conceptual agreement, and I don't know, I'd like to ask Representative Monis Anderson if it would, if it had or a local designee of the superintendent. It would just be the one word. I don't know, I haven't read your amendment, so I don't know what it encompasses. But it seemed to me that from what you said, you're focusing more on someone local. Is that correct or not correct?
Mr. Chair,
in
talking with legislative counsel, they had some issues regarding designating someone to make a decision like that. And so and this would be for the record, since it doesn't look like the amendment is, but it'd be good for the Ione and Morrow County to do it this way, even though maybe we won't have an amendment, is that any decision by the persons appointed under this subsection, which is, you know, the three from your Ione and the three from Morrow, to divide the assets and liabilities must be agreed to by at least two of the persons appointed to represent the chief sponsors and by at least two of the persons appointed to represent the school board. So that's basically what the amendment said, was for those decisions to be made by the majority of Ione and Morrow County.
Represent those.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to discuss the motion, comment on the motion.
Thank you.
I believe that Morrow County School District concluded it was no longer cost-effective to continue to operate the high school program in Ione. So whether or not there was a vote, I think a clear intent was shown there. Mr. Bennett talked about new ways to do business. I think of a school district or a school is having difficulties. Let's allow them the creativity and the innovation by those in those local districts that want to try new options and alternatives. Let's allow them to do that. Most of all, let's let local control go forward and self-determination in our communities. If that's a precedent, I don't think that's a bad precedent at all. On the funding issue, public charter schools are right now operating, I believe, with 80% of what normal schools are. We have a school in Lebanon, a charter school, that's operating at $4,800 per child very successfully. If the numbers are right that we've been given, this school district will have about $8,000 per child. That's 160 students at $1.2 million. So they will have a lot more money than the school in Lebanon has per child. So I think we should give them this opportunity, and with that, I would move the previous question.
Let's stand at ease. Okay, let's go back on the record on work session for Senate Bill 372. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion to pass Senate Bill 372 to the floor.
Okay. Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the amendment, is that what they're called? A12, I guess.
Dash A12
amendments to Senate Bill 372.
Okay. Representative Moss Anderson has moved adoption of the dash A12s to Senate Bill 372. Further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you. I took to heart what the Department of Ed was saying, Department of Education was saying regarding the department, the superintendent of the Department of Education actually, or a designee, making the decisions to divide the assets and liabilities. I agree. I feel that that should be a local decision, and I cite the example of what happened when we were consolidating and we had a boring school in the Gresham-Barlow area, and it had to be divided between Gresham-Barlow and Sandy. And there was a horrendous amount of negotiation and money, a lot of money, and we brought attorneys in to finally have to take care of that. I feel that really does need to be at the local level, and that's why I felt very positive in submitting this. And basically what the amendment says is that in the main bill you have two entities, the Ione people and the Morrow County people, and you just have to have a majority of those. There's three on Morrow County, two of them have to agree, and of the Ione, two out of the three have to agree. So that's basically what the amendment would do. Thank you.
Okay, further discussion? Okay, seeing none, let's call the roll.
President Backman?
No.
President Barnhart?
No.
President Close?
No.
President Flores?
No.
President Moniz Anderson?
Yes.
President Berger?
Aye.
Chair votes no, and the motion is defeated. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 372A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved Senate Bill 372 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be very brief. This bill has been a difficult one for me because of the problem of the issue of consolidation as being a kind of a long-term policy for Oregon. In my local area, for example, there are a number of school districts that probably would provide a better education for their students if there was some consolidation. And I say that with some trepidation because the locals in my area care about and want to protect their own schools as much as the people in my own do. On the other hand, the issue, of course, is consolidate in order to produce a better education. Ione sounds a lot like the little school of Paisley that I represented for 18 months after redistricting, and in which I learned a lot about how small schools can operate. And I fully believe the things that Representative Smith has told us about the local community support for their school and their willingness to proceed with it. Voting no on this bill might be a positive and optimistic position to take because it would be supportive of the idea that we can raise more dollars for education in the state, and the consolidation issue goes away. The consolidation of schools goes away because Morrow County has more money for their schools. On the other hand, the optimistic position might be to vote yes because it increases local control so that Ione can weather the hard times and hang on until better times come. And I'm faced with a dilemma at that point as to which to do with really only barely adequate information. And I think I end up coming down on this one on the side of Ione and voting in favor of the bill because they seem satisfied after a lot of work that they can actually pull this off, and I wish them luck.
Thank you. Further discussion. Representative Backman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just a few comments. I was struck by Representative Montes Anderson's comment about the precedent that might be set if this bill passed. And I am into precedents, having been a long-time teacher. And I was thinking there are lots of other precedents on the other side. I was thinking about the success and effectiveness of a number of small schools that I know about. For example, St. Paul had a graduating class of 17 last year, and they're clearly a very successful school. Powers, up in the hills above Myrtle Creek, Point, is a successful school. I recall a friend saying that when he graduated in a class of 23, 16 went to college and all had their degrees. A remarkable success story. I think of friends who lived in Elkton who clearly represent a very small school. So I think the precedent for successful small schools is indeed very strong, and that weighs heavily in my thinking. I also have a lot of emails, as all of us do, and one of them is that IOWN has won, in its report cards, has won an exceptional award to at least 2 years, and a number of other awards. I think all their students have won a SIM. Very impressive indeed, I think. And it gives me a chance finally to conclude with something I believed for a long time. Now, you understand that I was, of course, a 37-year high school teacher and coach, and I used to say this at every chance I had. I say that any kid who wants a good education can get it in an Oregon public high school. I used to say large public high school, having been at McNary, which had 18 to 2,000 kids. And so I'm going to amend my old statement that any kid who wants a good education can get it in an Oregon, any Oregon public high school. If that kid really wants it, he can get it. She can get it. So our schools are as good as the students. The schools are there, and if students want it, it's there for them. And it seems to me that IOWN qualifies in that regard. So I'm going to be a yes.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that in my own district, we've been looking at the possibility of consolidating. I will say that Oregon has many faces, and almost any policy that we come up with does not necessarily fit. Our schools are not as far apart as some schools in eastern Oregon. And so I just kind of like to close with this comment with some apologies to a leading credit card company. 2,300 students cost $14 million. 160 students cost $1.2 million. The quality of education in IOWN, priceless.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the community of IOWN has a commendable sense of community, of family, and I think it's impressive that they're here. And I did not hear testimony that there was a huge undercurrent opposing this particular effort from either side of the discussion. One size doesn't necessarily fit all, and is this the best place to find resolution for the issue? Perhaps not. But for a lot of people, and as I've found in my first session here, sometimes the legislature is the court of last resort for many issues, and it seems to be for the citizens of IOWN. And I hope that they have great success, and I intend to vote yes.
Further discussion? Representative Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I truly want IOWN to maintain its high school. I will be voting no only because I feel that there are other options in able to save the school. And I know you've looked at them and you didn't like them, but within the system, I believe that there are other ways that you could have maintained your high school. And also, for the record, I would like to hope that the superintendent, when she reads the bill, that designee can be the people of the two groups that are doing the assets and liabilities and force them to come up with an agreeable situation.
And also, colleagues, I neglected to submit in the record for the public during the public hearing the letter of May 12, 2003 from Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council. Just want to make sure that that is adopted as part of the record, as part of your file. And to conclude this as well, I think share the same sentiments as the majority of the members in this committee. I am convinced that there has been adequate time to air this issue on the Senate side, and I do believe that that it was adequately done so. I am also certain that the superintendent of public instruction will be able to designate a decision maker or decision makers as she chooses that can be agreeable from both sides of those that are disagreeing if that happens. And finally, I am concerned about the timeline, and I am concerned that we get this to the governor as soon as we can to make sure that this can happen for this next budget year. So with that, let's call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Both aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, and the Senate Bill 372 will pass before the due pass recommendation, and we will ask Representative Grace Smith to carry the bill. And colleagues, with apologies for the extra time that we had to take on this issue, that we do have the family members still of Mr. Dellenbeck here, and with your courtesies, we'll just continue on for a few extra minutes to hear House Concurrent Resolution Number 11. We'll reopen the public hearing on HCR 11. Nanheim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Nan Heim, and I'm here today, I think, representing people who used to work for John Dellenbeck. And with me is Cheryl Perrin, who is one of those who used to work for John Dellenbeck. And I want to thank you for hearing our resolution. We'll be brief. I want to tell you a little bit about John Dellenbeck. He served three terms in the Oregon House of Representatives, 61, 63, and 65. His kids and I have been reminiscing about when they were small here, and he would hold them by the hand and take them around the halls and read them the quotes in the rotunda. He then served four terms in the United States House of Representatives. He had a long and distinguished career in public service, but he was always first and foremost a family man, and that is why I'm so delighted that all three of his children could be here today, and two of his grandchildren, and I'd like to introduce them, if I may, Mr. Chair. His sons, Richard and David Dellenbeck, his daughter, Barbara Dellenbeck-Olette, and two of his grandsons, Van Dellenbeck-Olette and Cy Dellenbeck-Olette. John Dellenbeck's legislative interests ranged from improving educational opportunities as a member of House Education and Labor Committee and balancing timber and environmental interests as a member of the House Interior Committee. Those of us who work for him have always been very proud to have done so, and there's a strong tie among all of us. In addition to Cheryl, there are a couple of other former staff members here. Mike Marsh, who now works at ODOT, and his wife, Char Whalen Marsh. Mike and Char were summer interns when they were still college students in our office and met and fell in love there. John had a long career in the House, 8 years, and probably is best remembered for sponsoring the legislation that created the Oregon Dunes National Recreation Area. He lost his bid for re-election in 1974. a sad night for all of us. But his public service career was far from over. He was appointed director of the Peace Corps by then President Gerald Ford, and he then served many years as president of the Christian College Consortium, a job which really was perfect for his personal and professional interests. He was a wonderful boss, known for his compassion and integrity. He did have one quirk, of course, as all bosses do, and that is that he loved to talk about his service here in the Oregon House. He believed strongly that the Oregon legislative system worked much better than Congress, and he loved to tell all of us about that. And we believe that his great affection and respect for this system, as well as his long, distinguished career, are good reasons for you to honor him. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just will take a few minutes. I worked for Congressman Dillon back in the late 60s.
Can get your name again for the record.
I'm sorry, Cheryl Perrin, spelled P-E-R-R-I-N. I worked for Congressman Dellenbach in his district office, and as you can well imagine, the challenges in the late 60s and early 70s of representing a district that was diverse as Grants Pass up to Eugene, he was an outstanding representative and really balanced all of his district's views very carefully and very cautiously. He was a wonderful boss, a wonderful person, somebody that I had great admiration for, and I felt so fortunate as my life took different turns. He and I ended up serving on the Lewis and Clark College Board of Trustees together, and so it was always very rewarding to sit at the trustees' meetings, and John would say something, and everyone wanted to hear what he had to say because it was always thoughtful and well put. So I appreciate so much your consideration of this and urge you to support it, and I'm sure you will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Perger.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say that the Dunes Recreation Area is in my district, and John Dellenbach is always remembered as being such an important part of my area.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Gilman, did you have anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, George Gilman, representative from District 55. I'd like you to pass this House concurrent resolution. We've known John a long time, and an opportunity that maybe some of you did not have. He happened to be in the same Rotary as I just in the last few years, and it's just a real pleasure to deal with a man that I think did a lot for this state and set a great example for the nation, for that matter, and the Peace Corps. And I'd be happy to carry this bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Anything further? No others to testify. We'll close the public hearing on HCR 11. Open up a work session on HCR 11. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 11 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Concurrent Resolution 11 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, call the roll.
Aye. Aye.
Hosan.
Aye.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the resolution will go to the floor with a be adopted recommendation, and we will have Representative Gilman carry the bill. And nothing further before this committee. This committee is adjourned.
Wow.